Welcome to LOCO, a weekly conversation celebrating the stories of unconventional, yet phenomenal, single women expats. Today, I speak with Julie Comfort, the founder and woman behind Rabble Magazine. Julie, thanks for joining me today. I really appreciate you showing up.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
You're quite welcome. So we're just going to get right into it. Tell me a bit about yourself and where you're from.
I grew up in New Jersey, and as soon as I finished high school, I moved away, and I've been moving around pretty much ever since. I've actually lived abroad a couple times, first in Bali in my early 20s for about a year, and then I moved back to the States, got married, had a baby. We moved to Costa Rica for 5 years, and when that marriage ended, I moved back to the States for a short while. And then in 2015, I moved to Berlin, where I live now. And for 12 years, I worked as a destination wedding photographer. So that job allowed me to travel quite a bit. But last year, I stopped doing that because it became a little more difficult for me to travel as a single mother. So then I decided to start publishing a magazine, and my inspiration for that was my daughter, Tully, who's now 11, and it's a creative art magazine tailored to girls between 8 and 12, and it showcases mostly female role models, but with a focus in the arts.
You're a traveler, obviously, mm-hmm. and you call Berlin home. Mm-hmm. So what inspired that move specifically?
Well, I've always dreamt of living in Europe. And I think when I was younger, I assumed it wasn't an attainable dream. I always thought I would need to be sponsored by a company in order to get a visa here or to marry a European. So it never even crossed my mind that it was a possibility. And then in 2015, I came to Europe on vacation, and I rented a car and I road tripped all over Europe. And in that time, I was kind of connecting with friends of friends, and I met a woman here in Berlin who was a friend of mine. She was a friend of a friend of mine from the States. And she was living here, and she really sold me on the Berlin lifestyle and how easy it was to get a visa and how livable the city was and how much better it was than the US. And so that planted the seed in my mind. And as I continued to travel around Europe for that trip, eventually I realized I really don't want to go back to living in the US. I was living back in my hometown in New Jersey at that point, and I didn't really have much to go back to. And so it was a pretty spontaneous decision, but I decided to make an appointment at the visa office here. And yeah, about a month later, I moved here.
So wait a minute. You applied for your visa while in Berlin?
Well, I made the appointment, and it takes several months to get an appointment. So I think at that time, it was probably around May, and the first available appointment was in July. But I had everything lined up by the time my appointment came around.
You didn't have to come back to the States to apply for your visa?
Oh, no. I did actually come back to the States because I had originally planned to. So I went back to the States for about 3 weeks. But I came back and I applied for the visa in Berlin.
Oh, wow. I asked because I know that with some countries, you have to apply in your home country. So that's really interesting. Okay.
Yeah, that's definitely not the case with the Berlin visa. In fact, in order to get the visa, you have to already be living here. It's a little bit of a catch-22 because one of the requirements of getting the visa is that you have to have a contract, like a lease or an apartment contract. You have to show that you have a place to live. And you need to do that before they give you the visa. So it's a little bit risky if you sign a rental contract and then don't get approved for the visa. But yeah, you have to be here to do it.
That's quite interesting. Okay, so let me just take you back a minute. Mm-hmm. Now, what is it about Berlin that really resonates with you?
Yeah, well, when I first got here, I immediately loved it. And of course, I came in, I think it was May at that time, and it's a beautiful time of year to visit. It's a very easy city to love in the spring and summer. Everyone's outdoors. Everyone here is really happy when the weather is nice. But I think the first thing that stood out to me when I came here as a visitor was two things. One was I noticed right away that the kids here had a lot of independence. And that was something I really struggled with when I moved back to the States, was that I felt there were a lot of restrictions on my daughter's independence. Before that, we had lived in Costa Rica. So she was used to having a lot of freedom. She could walk to school by herself. She could go down to the town square and meet her friends by herself. But then when we moved back to the States, she wasn't allowed to walk to school by herself. So when I came to Berlin, I saw kids riding their bikes together alone, even very small children. They had a very long distance from their parents. You know, they'd be riding their bike way ahead. Their parents weren't hovering over them in the way that parents do in the States. And the same with playgrounds. You know, the parents gave their kids a wide berth so that they kind of had some freedom and independence. And that was something that stood out to me right away that I was looking for my, you know, how I raised my daughter to Berlin. And right away that appealed to me.
That is quite appealing.
Exactly.
Okay, so let's bring it back to the visa process. Now, which visa did you apply for? And tell me a bit about that.
Sure. So I have, originally I had an artist visa. It's a very common way for people to move to Berlin. And that was actually what facilitated me being able to move here, as other countries in Europe are definitely stricter about visa requirements. Berlin has this special artist visa. And as a photographer, I was able to get that pretty easily. I think I needed to have health insurance, a lease on an apartment. I think I had to have around 8,500 euros in the bank and, you know, a couple other small things. And I showed them my portfolio, my college transcripts to prove that I was actually a photographer. And I needed a few letters of recommendation from people who live in Berlin saying that they would work with me if I got the visa, kind of vouching for me. And I originally got approved for 1 year, and then I had to go back and apply for an extension, which I got then 3 more years. And after 3 years with the artist visa, I'm only allowed to work as a photographer with that visa. And I'm not allowed to work at a job. I basically have to work for my own clients. And after 3 years, then you can go back and apply for an unlimited work visa. So that's what I have now. I can basically do anything for money.
How would you describe the level of ease, or how difficult was it? Difficult or?
I mean, it was not difficult. It was a little complicated, but it was certainly very attainable. You know, at first it felt a little overwhelming. There's a very long list of documents that you have to get. But once I kind of approached it systematically and went through the checklist one by one, and everything came together for me. I mean, there are some challenges in moving to Berlin right now. It's very hard to find an apartment, especially one that will let you register there. You have to register in an address to prove that you live there. And it can be difficult to find a place. And health insurance here is very expensive, which I wasn't expecting. And also, I came here with my daughter and I had to register her in school. And I didn't speak any German when I got here. So all of it was a little challenging, but I managed to do it somehow. And now there are definitely a lot of services for expats that will help you go through the entire process. And I mean, I recommend going that route if you can afford it, because if I had found that option at the time, I definitely would have willingly outsourced most of the tasks. It was a lot of bureaucracy. Germany is famous for its bureaucracy, but it's not difficult. It's just time consuming.
I'm glad you mentioned the language factor, because I was going to ask if there were a bar in terms of being able to speak the language in order to apply for your visa, but apparently not. So that's great to hear.
But I did have to bring a translator with me to my appointment.
Right. Okay.
But you're not required to speak German to get the visa.
So tell me a bit more about Rabl.
Okay. So actually our second issue just came out today, actually. And I got the idea to start the magazine because I actually started out thinking about teen magazines and how how much I used to love magazines when I was a teenager. I was actually talking to a friend of mine who had a teenage daughter, and she was saying how there wasn't really much good media that she felt was directed toward her daughter. And she was actually thinking of starting a website for teenagers. And I started thinking about creating a teen magazine from kind of a nostalgia standpoint. And then I realized that actually I know absolutely nothing about teenagers today. I don't know how to connect to them nowadays. I think being a teenager now is completely different than being a teenager in the early 90s when I was a teenager. So that seemed like maybe a barrier to entry for that particular field. But then I thought about the fact that, you know, at the time I had a 10-year-old daughter, and I thought how much she would enjoy a magazine and how cool it would be to highlight different artists and musicians, and especially women and minorities and people doing really cool things around the world that kids might not otherwise be exposed to. I felt like a lot of what she's exposed to on YouTube and, you know, the other channels that she, you know, watches and those kind of things, they're more mainstream. And, you know, I don't know if the pop stars today are necessarily the best role models, but those are the people that are getting the most exposure. And I just thought it would be really cool to give some exposure to a young audience of women who are doing maybe more untraditional things, and some indie bands and writers and musicians and artists, you know, all kinds of people that girls her age wouldn't necessarily come across on their own. So that's where the idea came from.
So how do you marry tailoring adult-like content to that segment?
Well, that's a good question. I actually feel like a lot of the content that's geared towards kids my daughter's age is maybe almost too dumbed down or cutesy. I've seen other kids' magazines that are, you know, they're all illustrated and, you know, they're adorable, but I feel like her tastes are more sophisticated than a lot of the media that's geared towards kids gives them credit for. So I wanted to make something that was a little more sophisticated. And, you know, the content is very tame. Obviously, it's appropriate for kids, but I still want them to see all these cool opportunities that exist for them and all the different ways that they can live and be creative and express themselves. And I just wanted them to have maybe some different role models than just Katy Perry and Miley Cyrus and stuff. I just thought there's so many interesting women in the world doing interesting things. And I mean, I think I know about them and my peers know about them, but I don't know if kids are seeing those kind of things.
What I'm getting that you're saying is that you're modeling a direction, you know, basically. That's an alternative to pop culture.
Exactly. It's a little more indie. It's a little more edgy. It's just different. You know, I just wanted to give a different perspective on creativity and what's happening in the world than what I think they're normally, you know, sold.
I love it, actually. How are you finding the reception?
I have gotten great feedback. Everyone seems to love the magazine. I put a lot of love into the design. I do pretty much everything myself right now. So I do all of the design and most of the writing. There's some stuff that's been contributed by other people, and I have commissioned some illustrations and some custom design elements. But for the most part, I do a lot of it, and I have been getting great feedback on the look of the magazine. People love the concept of it. Really, the only critique that I've really received is, I think the number one question that I get that gives me pause is a lot of parents of boys are kind of asking me, you know, boys need this kind of stuff too. And I understand that there's a lot of content that's coming into the market right now for girls. There's several other magazines out for girls as well, books about female empowerment and that kind of thing. And I think parents of boys feel like maybe their sons are being left out of this onslaught of new content. But of course, I think all of this content is in response to a lack of really great empowering content for girls in the past.
Right. And I think the simple response is, if they need that, create it.
Exactly. I feel the same way. And of course, it's not like boys can't read it. There's nothing in it that is only for girls. And I certainly don't mean to exclude anyone. It just mostly highlights female subjects. And I think that the look of the magazine might appeal more to girls, but I certainly don't want to, you know, suggest that only girls could appreciate it. But, you know, of course I had to narrow down my market, and I don't know anything about boys. I mean, I have two daughters. I grew up with two sisters. I mean, I don't know the first thing about what boys are interested in. So, I mean, of course, you know, nowadays we don't want to make such, you know, strong distinctions between the genders, and I recognize the importance in that. But at the same time, I don't want to deny that there are differences in what boys and girls that age are interested in.
I'm with you. I think it's your magazine, and you're pushing your intention, and I think that's completely valid. So keep going.
Thank you.
Yeah. Let's talk more about the city where you live. Mm-hmm. Can we get into some of your favorites?
Sure. So actually, I was just telling someone the other day, Berlin is a huge city. I mean, it can take an hour to get from one part of it to another. And it can be a little overwhelming for me. I'm more of a homebody, actually. So I was telling someone the other day, I really treat my neighborhood as if I live in a small town. The only times that I leave my neighborhood is if I'm meeting a friend or I have a meeting or something like that. But on a day-to-day basis, especially since I work from home and I also have a newborn right now, I treat my neighborhood like a small town. And I happen to be lucky enough to live in a really nice neighborhood that has everything I need within walking distance, including parks and markets and, you know.
I think that's fantastic because this is from a local's perspective. So hyperlocal is fine.
So definitely my favorite places are in a pretty small radius around a great neighborhood. It's called the Bergman Keats. And it's funny, when I first moved here and I just happened to find an apartment on this street. But when I would tell people I lived on Bergmanstrasse, they would say, ooh, Bergmanstrasse. I guess it's a really well-beloved part of Berlin. So
tell me about your favorite place to get breakfast or brunch.
Okay, well, brunch is my favorite meal, and I wish that there was more of a brunch culture in Germany, but Germans mostly just eat bread and baked goods for breakfast, so it's a little hard to find great brunch, but there's a place that I really like called Ahorn. It's on the canal, and it has a great atmosphere. It has this cute little outdoor seating area, and they make homemade bagels, and they have kind of a signature breakfast, which is it's sort of like a charcuterie. It's a bunch of cheese and some meat and fresh bread, and they have excellent coffee. So that's probably my favorite place. I wish there were better brunch options, though, to be honest.
Do you have a favorite cafe?
Yeah, so that's also my favorite cafe. If I just want a cup of coffee as well, I usually stop in there.
Yeah. And would you say that's the same place for good people watching?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
A lot
of people go there on first dates, so I always find myself eavesdropping on some Tinder date or something.
Funny. What about casual dining?
Well, we don't go out to eat all that often, but I think one of my favorite things to do to eat is I live very close to Tempelhofer Feld, which is also an attraction in Berlin. It's an old airport. And they pretty much left it as is. So all the runways are just, it's like this huge wide open area in the middle of the city, and people ride their bikes and roller skate and stuff around the runways. And there's a beer garden there. And on the weekends they have kind of like a food cart that does bratwurst, and they have this like a pork steak sandwich that is amazing. And so we get that almost every Sunday. That's kind of our Sunday routine. And also, if I'm going out for a casual meal, there's a really good ramen place near me on the canal called Kokolo. It's very well known. And then I also live near this really cool, very European kind of style indoor market. It has all the different food vendors, like the meat guy and the cheese guy and the fish guy, and then they also have like a food court. There's a tapas place and a pasta place. There's a Greek place. And so there's kind of something for everyone, and it's cheap and it's close. And it's sort of like an upscale European food court.
Oh, okay. That was my next question about getting a great upscale meal. And what's the market?
It's called Markthal Marheineke.
Okay, so what about, let's say, a great dessert shop or bakery?
Oh, that's a good question. Actually, the place I mentioned earlier, Ahorn, has amazing baked goods. They have this phenomenal cheesecake that is just to die for. I think the topping is passion fruit, maybe. Germany is known for its bakeries. So I'm not that partial to baked goods, but you know, there's a bakery on every corner here. So if that's your thing, you kind of can't go wrong.
Okay, so you say you don't go out much. Might you have a favorite wine bar or a place for cocktails?
I do, actually. My favorite local wine bar is this place called Not Only Riesling. And it's really tiny. It kind of doubles as a wine shop. And they have one long table in the middle for doing private events. And I always walk by and see these events with envy. They look so fun. But they just have a couple wine barrel tables out front where you can stand and have a glass of wine. And they're such a friendly staff. They'll recommend something to you and let you try different things. And it's just like the perfect place to get a glass of wine. I really, really love it. And then the other bar that I like to go to, it's a little bit kitschy. It's called the Anchor Clausa, and it's kind of a local institution. It has this nautical theme. It sort of feels like an old, it reminds me of restaurants in kind of seaside towns in the States, actually. It's all wood inside. It feels very old, and it has, yeah, a great jukebox and just kind of a weird, kitschy nautical theme. And it has a little deck that actually hangs over the canal. So it does feel like you're on the water, even though Berlin is a landlocked city.
So let's get a bit gritty. Do you have a favorite dive bar or best drunk food places?
Yeah, I mean, the Anchor Clausa is definitely kind of divey. So that's a fun place to just go and get drunk. In my neighborhood, there's also a bar called the Zahair Lounge that I really like. It has couches and little seating areas so you can kind of get cozy with someone in there. But there's always a fun young crowd in there. It just has a nice vibe. I really enjoy it. But I mean, again, I haven't gone out in a while. I just had a baby a couple months ago, so I'm sure they're still great.
I just want to know.
Yes.
People want to know. Okay, so let's get into a bit of shopping, like open-air markets for food and...
Yeah, so like I said, in my neighborhood is this Markthalle Meier Heinicke, and that's where I like to buy some of my food sometimes. It makes me feel very European to shop there because it's all the different vendors. And then we have a wonderful farmer's market near Zugstern Church on Saturdays. And there's always a bunch of food carts there as well. So we typically, on a nice day, we'll go and get lunch there and then pick up whatever we need. And there's also a really cool flea market every weekend in my neighborhood. And what I love about Berlin is that the flea market is open year round. Even if it's below freezing, there will still be a couple vendors out there all bundled up. So, you know, they're hardy people here. And there's always outdoor things going on all year round.
What about hidden gems, like a neighborhood you may visit from time to time?
Yeah, I think my favorite neighborhood other than my own neighborhood is probably the Grafekiez, which is just the neighborhood around Grafestrasse, which is a little street that runs through Kreuzberg, and it ends at the canal. And there's some great restaurants and bars and bakeries and boutiques on that street. It's just a really sweet, quaint road. And on a nice day, I love to walk down there and get some snacks on the way, maybe have breakfast there, and then end at the canal and maybe get an ice cream cone and walk along the canal. I really enjoy that little part of my larger neighborhood.
So moving forward, what would you say is the best time of year to visit?
Definitely spring and summer. There's a huge outdoor culture here. You know, there's beer gardens and there's so many parks. There's so many green areas. I love to walk along the canal when the weather is nice. So I definitely think summer is the best time to visit. And there's so much to do outdoors. I love going to the outdoor cinema. And I mean, it's just such a walkable city as well. It's totally flat, basically. So anytime that the weather is nice enough to be outside is great. The winters here are pretty brutal. It gets dark very early and it can be very cold. But I also think Christmas time is a nice time to come because there are these wonderful German Christmas markets. It's basically a huge outdoor fair with rides and ice skating and blue vine, and which is hot mulled wine, and vendors selling these carved wooden tchotchkes, basically. But they're really wonderful. And it's a really festive way to spend the season.
Would you say there are off-season gyms?
Oh, I don't know. It seems like most of the events definitely are based in the summer or the Christmas season. Outside of that, you'll probably get some good deals on accommodations and that type of thing. But otherwise, yeah, I don't know. There's not really, I mean, all year round, it's fine here, of course, but the weather can be quite brutal in the fall and winter.
And how do you cope with the weather? I mean, how do you cope with the winter? I don't think I could do it.
Well, I grew up in New Jersey. I mean, I don't think the winters here are too much worse. I think the hardest part is that it gets dark at about 3:30 in the winter. So it's very, very dark. So that part is a little challenging.
Do you have one of those lamps or something?
Oh, yeah. No, I should probably get one, though. I heard, though, if you go outside and you just try to get as much sun on your face as possible, then that's the best way to do it. At least it is kind of sunny when the sun is out. So
let's talk culture, museum culture. Do you frequent any galleries or museums?
Yeah, my favorite museum is called the CO Museum. It's actually, I think, a photography museum, but they always have really fabulous exhibits. And they have an amazing bookstore. And also, one thing I really love about it is they have these very cool workshops for kids. There's one coming up that my daughter's going to do for self-portraits that looks really fun. But they always have really cool exhibits that I enjoy. And they have great parties for their openings. There was an exhibit for a music video director. So they had a dance party with his music videos playing in the background. And then the other art things here that I really love is there are a few private collections that you can book a tour of. One is called the Samlung Hoffman, and it's this kind of eccentric rich woman, and it's her private art collection. And you tour through it, and then at the end, you actually get to go into her living room and meet her, and that was very cool. The other one that's more well-known is called the Samlung Boros Collection, and it's in an old bunker, which is really neat. It's a very cool building, and I believe the collection rotates every couple months as well. But you have to book ahead. They're very, they book up quickly, but definitely worth a visit.
What's the best way to score tickets?
They both have websites, you can book tickets online. They're really reasonably priced. I think the issue is more just getting a spot. I think Samlung Boros books up maybe 3 or 4 months in advance.
And what about bigger cultural events happening in the city?
I don't know too much about big events. Well, there's the Berlinale, which is like a film festival. And I'm not sure if it's every year or every other year, but that always has some fun events and film screenings and that kind of thing. And in a more intimate kind of event, there's this one thing I really enjoy. I think it's every Friday in the summer called Bite Club. And it's an outdoor kind of street food festival along the river. And they have a boat that's parked on the river, and you can kind of go and party on this boat. But it's a very cool event that's weekly throughout the summer.
Okay, so for visitors, what would you say is a great day trip?
I would say if you're coming in the summer, there are so many wonderful lakes around. It's hard to pick a favorite, but I think within 45 minutes drive in any direction, you can hit a beautiful lake and be in the woods and, you know, spend the day in nature. I mean, that's what I do for a day trip when I have the time. The surrounding area is definitely mostly nature when you get out of Berlin.
Say I was visiting. What's a good tour or, say, weekend? You know, what will we do for the weekend?
I always bring my visitors to Tempelhofer Feld. I think it's really cool. It's a unique space, and it's definitely unique to Berlin. And it's always a good place to walk around, get a beer. And then I usually take people along the Landwehr Canal, which is also really lovely. And definitely stop by a beer garden. My favorite beer garden is called Golgotha, and it's in Victoria Park. It's in the middle of a park. It's just beautiful. I love the outdoor movie theater. It's basically beach chairs in a park with a movie screen, and they're usually in English, so that's nice. And there's also some lovely saunas here that are kind of fun if you're comfortable with co-ed nudity. Some of my American friends are a little more uptight about it. Certainly in America, we don't grow up with the same free body culture that they have here. Nudity is just really commonplace. And I've gone to a couple pools that are just totally naked. And yeah, you get used to it really quickly. But there's some really lovely places to do that. And then, yeah, maybe go to a lake. Or the flea market or the, you know, farmer's market.
Sounds fantastic. What would you say is a faux pas that a visitor should avoid?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know if anything comes to mind. I don't know. I mean, I think Berlin is a very forgiving place. The people here are very open-minded and it's very multicultural. So I think they are kind of unfazed by much.
You know, I was thinking when we were talking about the visa process and we mentioned the language, how are you finding, were you taking classes? How's that coming along for you?
So when I first got here, I was taking full-time classes and I was kind of going through the levels and it was fine. German is a very challenging language. It's very difficult to learn, especially the grammar as a native English speaker. And then at some point when I started this business, I didn't have time to take the classes. They're 4 days a week and I couldn't do both. So I sort of put my German language learning on hold. And I find that I speak enough German to get through my day. I can definitely interact with everyone in my neighborhood and kind of day-to-day business, going to restaurants, shopping, that kind of thing. Beyond that, I don't know that I'll ever reach a level of German where I can easily converse. At this point, my business is in English and most people here speak English. It's almost impossible to get enough practice to reach fluency because as soon as I start speaking German to people, they can tell right away I'm a native English speaker and they automatically switch to English. So,
right.
Yeah. So I don't know if I'll ever really get to the next level.
But you don't have to. Berlin is quite accommodating.
Really? Definitely. Yeah. There's definitely a lot of foreigners here. There's a huge expat community here. And yeah, it's very welcoming to different cultures.
Now, I don't really get into politics on the show, but since you mentioned expats, you know, that Germany accepted loads of refugees. How are you finding being an expat there? Do you feel you're imposing?
I don't feel that way only because I am, you know, one of very many foreigners who have settled here. I think if I was in a greater minority, it might stand out to me more. But I think Germany has been very welcoming. And I know people from so many different countries here. And that's part of what appeals to them about Berlin is just how diverse it is in terms of where people are coming from. And I think that Berlin especially has been very welcoming to the refugees. I know that it's been problematic in some of the smaller towns that are maybe not so open-minded, but in Berlin, it seems to be that in general, the culture is very welcoming. But also I will say that Berlin is not necessarily representative of all of Germany. It's unique within Germany. It's a much more progressive and liberal city, I think, than the other major cities in Germany.
Well, Julie, this is the part where we talk a bit more about Rabble and you let listeners know where they can find you.
Yeah, so our website is rabblemag.com and Rabble is spelled R-A-B-B-E-L. It's the German spelling, so just want to mention that. And on Facebook and Instagram, it's also just Rabble Mag. And right now you can purchase the first two issues exclusively through our website, but we are getting into more and more stores coming up. So, but for right now, it's mostly available online on our website.
Fantastic. I love it. I love it. I love it. So I just want to thank you so much. This has been great. This has been a great interview, actually. So we're connected now, and anytime I know of an opportunity, I'm more than willing to share and pass it along, and I'll let people know more about Rabble.
That would be great. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, so thanks so much.
Okay. Thanks for tuning in today. I hope you found this local's perspective informative and even inspiring. If so, please consider subscribing to Loco using iTunes or your favorite Android podcast player. If you have any comments or questions, or even a story you'd like to submit, please connect with us at loco.co, that's L-O-C-A-U-X.co. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time.